Hello, welcome to another episode of Drunk Wiki. We've got a bit of a special one today as well. So today we're going to be covering a predetermined topic. So we're going to be going off-piste. We're not going to be clicking on anything random. We're going to be diving straight into a very specific topic. Now, for anyone listening on the day of publishing, you might notice the date is particularly significant if you're from the United Kingdom. Now, I'm recording this on the 31st. It's 10 to what I do, just to get everything ready and I can publish things out. And within about an hour or two, the United Kingdom will be leaving the European Union. So I figured this is a great opportunity to go onto the Wikipedia page, throw in the term Brexit and see what we get up, and lo and behold, we've got a nice juicy article with plenty to cover: the timeline, the background, the referendum, and all the bullshit that surrounded it, everything. I'm going to whiz through. I'm not going to do like a 2-hour one. I've had a few as usual, you know. I've done a nice hard week's work, and I like to kick back and have a few ales, have a few beers, you know, I'm in a perfect mood for Drunk Wiki. So I figured, yep, I'm definitely going to do this Brexit thing. We're going to go straight into it. So we've got a nice summary, which is perfect for anyone who's jumping in, has no idea about Brexit. You know, you've been living under a rock, you don't know what that is, what the word means. I'm going to break it down. So, Brexit is the name that is given to Britain exiting. So you take British or Britain and the word exit. So a British exit, which becomes Brexit. And it is the withdrawal of the United Kingdom from the European Union. Now, this happened following a June 2016 referendum in which 52% voted leave. The UK government formally announced the country's withdrawal in March 2017, beginning the Brexit process. So that was about almost 3 years ago now. The UK is set to withdraw from the EU at 11 p.m. GMT on the 31st of January 2020. So, I mean, I'm recording this at 9 p.m. on the 31st, so 2 hours left. So, yeah. There will then be a transition period, which will go on until the end of the year, 31st of December 2020, during which the UK and the EU will negotiate their future trade relationship. Now, the withdrawal is advocated by Eurosceptics and opposed by pro-Europeanists. So you've got one side and the other, which is with everything, you know, lo and behold, both of whom span the political spectrum. The UK joined the European Communities, the EC, principally the European Economic Community, in 1973. So back in the 70s, that's when we kind of started to go forward and enter the European Union. And in 1975, there was a referendum. So in the 1970s and 80s, withdrawal from the EC was advocated mainly by the political left. The Labour Party's 1983 manifesto. That's interesting. So, in 1992, Maastricht Treaty, I'm mispronouncing that because I'm absolutely fucked, founded the EU, but was not put to a referendum. The Eurosceptic wing of the Conservative Party, which is, just for everyone listening, is the right wing political kind of side of British politics, led a rebellion over the ratification of the treaty, and with the UK Independence Party, UKIP, and the cross-party People's Pledge campaign, pressured the Conservative Prime Minister David Cameron to hold a referendum on the continued EU membership. So, we've had EU membership now for going on 50 years. And it got pushed through that enough was enough, I guess. Cameron, who had campaigned to remain, resigned after the result was succeeded by Theresa May. On 29th of March 2017, the UK government formally began the withdrawal process by invoking Article 50 of the Treaty on European Union, with permission from Parliament. May called a snap election in June 2017, which resulted in a Conservative minority government supported by the Democratic Unionist Party. So, what that all means is come 2016, a referendum kicked off. They put it to the people, a non-legally binding referendum. That's what a referendum is, not legally binding. A referendum is a vote to gauge what the public's opinion is on something. And then what you do is then you ratify. And in this case, Article 50. So, what was going to happen was we were going to vote, see what was going to go down, and then if everyone wanted to stay in, happy days. If not, go forward with Article 50 and look to leave the EU. Now, arguably, before I carry on with the article, the consensus really at the time was, what a load of shit, everyone wants to stay in, it's hugely beneficial, except that didn't happen. There was quite an enormous turnout in England and Wales for a leave, and so the vote was actually very, very close. It was 52-48. It's an enormously close, arguably 50-50. So because of that, it's definitely split the country a bit. And, you know, why this topic is so controversial, and, you know, it's controversial to do a podcast about it, but you know me, this is Drunk Wiki, and a single fuck is not given, so let's crack on, shall we? Where were we? The UK negotiated to leave the EU Customs Union and Single Market. This resulted in the November 2018 withdrawal agreement, but the UK Parliament voted against ratifying it 3 times. Yeah. And it dragged on for quite a fucking while, which is why the referendum happening in 2016 and Brexit being in 2020. That is why. Because there wasn't a consensus on the withdrawal agreement. That is largely down to this whole 50-50 situation. Whether you're left or right, everyone was very 50-50 about this whole situation, which angered both sides, and why there wasn't an agreement put in place. Basically a complete farce. Anyway, let's skip ahead. In March 2019, the UK Parliament voted for May to ask the EU to delay Brexit until April, and then later October. Having failed to get her agreement approved, May resigned as Prime Minister in July and was succeeded by Boris Johnson. He sought to replace parts of the agreement and vowed to leave the EU by the new deadline. On the 17th of October 2019, the UK government and EU agreed to a revised withdrawal agreement with new arrangements for Northern Ireland. Parliament approved the agreement for further scrutiny, but rejected passing it into law before the 31st of October deadline, and forced the government, through the Benn Act, which is a chap that popped it through in Parliament, to ask for a third Brexit delay. I mean, come on. An early general election was then held on the 12th of December. The Conservatives won a large majority in that election, with Boris Johnson declaring that the UK would leave the EU in early 2020. So there we are. Oh, let's have a little sip, shall we? So, we're coming to the end of the general kind of overarching summary of what's gone down. So here we are. The withdrawal agreement was ratified by the UK Parliament on the 23rd of January 2020. So literally about a week ago. And by the European Parliament on the 29th of January, 2 days ago, ensuring that the UK leaves the EU on the 31st of January. Today. There will then be a transition period until the 31st of December 2020, where the future trade relationship will be negotiated. Don't even get me fucking started. Many effects of Brexit depend on how closely the UK will be tied to EU, or whether it withdraws before terms are agreed. and a no-deal Brexit. The broad consensus among economists, just burped into the mic. Anyway, the word I'm after is God damn. It truly is the drunk wikis and all drunk wikis. Economists is that Brexit will likely harm the UK's economy and reduce its real per capita income in the medium term and long term, and that the referendum itself damaged the economy. Brexit is likely to reduce immigration from European Economic Area countries to the UK and poses challenges for UK higher education, academic research and security. Following Brexit, EU law and the EU Court of Justice will no longer have supremacy over UK laws or its Supreme Court, except to a temporary extent agreed upon in the withdrawal agreement. So, if we're going to take a on-the-fence look at this, get a huge benefit from leaving the EU in terms of kind of the court and laws of justice. So, when it comes to court, the UK will have far larger control. However, there's also the downside. Whilst you are having reduced immigration, that means you're having less talent being attracted to the country due to the rising inflation and the value of the pound going down. And with GDP going down as well, the UK becomes a less attractive place to go to. And so it's kind of like prestige, as it were, still going to be in place. I mean, we still have Oxford and Cambridge and that sort of thing. It's going to be tarnished, for sure. But, you know, you have the plus side of some other wins as well. So that's an on-the-fence side, you know. There's wins and there's losses. But that's the on-the-fence view, before we get into what I think. And we'll discuss that at the end of the podcast. So we've got a nice little timeline, and it tells us factually what happened. So, 2016. So 2016 consisted of the UK holding the referendum. 52% of voters voted to leave. David Cameron announced his resignation. Now, largely, the thought behind the Prime Minister leaving was because he didn't think it was going to go through, and he didn't think that people were going to vote leave. So the consensus at the time, really, until recently maybe, is that David Cameron was a Remain voter, or someone that believed in the EU. Now, unfortunately, that's not the case. You know, David Cameron has, you know, I think I saw a quote later in the news today that he knew that this would happen. So I think there was an idea that there was enough, you know, thought of leaving the EU amongst citizens and the political elite to warrant putting the referendum in. Otherwise, why do it at all? Here we go. Theresa May accepts the Queen's invitation, forms government, and the UK House of Commons votes 461 to 89 in favour of Theresa May's plan to trigger Article 50 by the end of March 2017. So there we are. And then in 2017, we start the ball rolling, and Labour leaders Jeremy Corbyn instructs his MPs to support a bill. So the UK government introduces a 137-word bill in Parliament to empower her to trigger Article 50. So this became a big thing as well. So Jeremy Corbyn kind of supporting the process kind of irked a lot of Labour supporters. So typically, at a glance, you would say that Leave voters were more right-wing, and Remain voters were more left-wing. That's a very off-the-mark assumption, which isn't true at all, and doesn't paint the full picture. But let's just start there. And so you've got left-wing voters voting for Labour, confused because Jeremy Corbyn isn't aligning with them. However, you do have a lot of left-wing supporters who are voting to leave, which is by some, by many in fact, considered a right-wing point of view. So already it becomes a massive shit show. You've got working class people with barely a penny to their name voting for something that could jeopardise their financial future for decades to come, and the generations before them, and after them. And then you've also got on the other side, in the Conservative Party, right-wing voters who are very wealthy, I mean, including very famous people, wanting to remain, despite the fact that, you know, a hard Brexit would hardly affect them at all. So there's definitely both sides to that, and that dominated a lot of the kind of rhetoric of 2017. And not to forget, Theresa May coming into power. Which, for a lot of people, was a bit of a worry, because the last time we had a female Prime Minister was Maggie Thatcher. I mean, let's throw it straight out there. Maggie Thatcher was a fucking terrible Prime Minister. That's not, you know, taking sides, you know. It's objectively, she was bad. Like, I would say objectively, Tony Blair was a poor Prime Minister. So was Maggie Thatcher. She crippled the economy. Just like Tony Blair was a warmonger, and frankly should be in prison. And so the worry there was that Theresa May would be emulating Maggie Thatcher, and in many ways has. But that could be argued. Anyway, that was the thought process of many during 2017 when Theresa May came into power. 2018, a UK white paper on the future relationship between the UK and the EU, known as the Chequers Agreement, is finalised. So this is a document that gets sent to the EU. Davis resigns as Secretary of State. He's not happy. Dominic Raab is appointed as his successor. Boris Johnson's not happy. He resigns as Foreign Secretary. And lo and behold, the EU rejects the UK White Paper. Now, the White Paper is an authoritative report or guide that informs readers concisely about its complex issue and presents the issuing body philosophy on the matter. It is meant to help the readers understand an issue, solve a problem, or make a decision. The initial British term concerning a type of government-issued document was proliferated, taking a somewhat new meaning in business. So there's a general idea. I've just gone on to the definition there on Wikipedia. So it wanted to present that to the EU. Now, by November 2018, the Brexit withdrawal agreement was finally published. And then, shortly after, Raab resigned as Secretary of State for the exiting of the European Union. And some other chap was appointed, some guy called Stephen Barclay. Anyway, we managed to get it in 25th of November 2018. 27 other EU member states endorsed the withdrawal agreement. So we're starting to move now. We're in 2019, and the first meaningful vote is held on the withdrawal agreement in the UK House of Commons. The UK government is defeated by 432 votes to 202. And it goes on and on. The next meaningful vote, 391 to 242, defeat. The next one, 412 to 202. That is a pass on the Article 50. Then the next one requests the EU to extend to the 30th of June, in which the European Council counters to offer it for the 22nd of May, and then it is passed by 29th of March 2019. But if it does not, then the UK has until the 12th of April. So there was a bit of negotiation there, but it went through. So you can see now the trend, not only in me ballsing up this fucking recital because I've had a few, but also it's a very rocky road. A lot of failed votes, a lot of mess, a lot of uncertainty, a lot of confusion. This is what you get from a referendum that's 52-48, sorry. Now, the 2019 overview is very long and laborious, far too long and laborious for a drunk wiki. But essentially what happens is that a lot of confidence in Theresa May was lost. A huge amount of confidence. Theresa May consistently started to lose votes in Parliament with the withdrawal agreement. Lost a lot of confidence. And so, if we scroll down here and we look for when good old Boris came in. Whereabouts is it? Here we go. I think it was sometime in October, wasn't it? Here we go. July, Boris accepts the Queen invitation to form government. Here we go. So, Theresa May requests for a second time that the EU extend Article 50 to the 30th of June. The European Council grants another extension to the Article 50 period. For the first day of the first month that in which the withdrawal agreement is passed, whichever comes first, if the UK does not hold European Parliament elections in May 2019, it will leave on the 1st of June, however it did. The UK holds elections on the European Parliament, which sees the Brexit Party, led by Nigel Farage, being the largest party, winning 29 seats, with the anti-Brexit Liberal Democrats, led by Vince Cable, coming second with 16 seats. Now, here's where it kicks in. Theresa May announces that she will resign as Conservative Party leader, effective 7th of June, due to being unable to get her Brexit plans through Parliament and several votes of no confidence, continuing as Prime Minister while the Conservative leadership contest takes place. Basically, Theresa May completely fucked it up, spent two or so years just balling it up, losing votes, not getting anywhere. And then, basically, the Conservative Party get together and they have a majority. And then, long story short, Boris Johnson gets in power. The end. So there's the timeline. Boris Johnson comes in power and he starts pushing everything through. And then here we are, Brexit. And there's the timeline. Now, there's a lot more to it. There's background, okay? There's background to the UK and the EU. So, let's start from the beginning. Because originally there was the Inner Six, the European countries that signed the original Treaty of Paris in 1951, establishing the European Coal and Steel Community. Now, the Inner Six, if we just click here, consisted of Belgium, France, Italy, Luxembourg, Netherlands, and West Germany. And then, after that, the Outer Seven consisted of Austria, Denmark, Norway, Portugal, Sweden, Switzerland, and, last but not least, the United Kingdom. Now, in 1955, before the Outer Seven joined, Messina Conference deemed that the ECSC, the European Coal and Steel Community, was a success, and resolved to extend the concept further. Oh shit, I'm gonna sneeze. Oh, I thought a second one was going to come there. Right. Good grief. It's definitely not conducive to a wiki. But remember, these are very unorthodox. Hence the name. Now, where were we? Deemed that the ECSC was a success and resolved to extend the concept further, thereby leading to the 1957 Treaties of Rome, establishing the blah blah blah, fuckity blah, these known as the bloody fucking blah. Anyway, the UK attempted to join in 1963 and 1967. But these applications were vetoed by the President of France. I didn't know that. Charles de Gaulle. De Gaulle? Well, he definitely had some, didn't he? Bastard. Anyway, sometime after de Gaulle resigned as President of France in 1969, prick, the UK successfully applied for EC membership, and the Conservative Prime Minister Edward Heath signed the Treaty of Accession in 1972. How interesting. A Conservative Prime Minister signed the accession, and the Conservative parties have brought us out. How very fucking poetic. Anyway, so we signed the accession. Parliament passed the European Communities Act later that year, and the UK joined Denmark and Ireland in becoming a member on the 1st of January 1973. 2013. So, we were in the EU for 47 years. Didn't even make the full 50. Shame. Anyway, the opposition Labour Party won the February 1974 election without a majority and then contested the subsequent October 74 election with a commitment to renegotiate Britain's terms of membership of the EC, believing them to be unfavourable, and then hold a referendum to whether to remain in the EC on the new terms. Labour again won the election, this time with a small majority. And in 1975, the UK held its first ever national referendum, asking whether the UK should remain in the EC. Doesn't this sound fucking familiar? Despite the significant division within the ruling Labour Party, all major political parties and the mainstream press supported continuing membership of the EC. On 5th of June 1975, 67.2% of the electorate and all but two UK counties and regions voted to stay in. Support for the UK to leave the EC in 1975 appears unrelated to the support for leave in the 2016 referendum. I mean, there's a little map here, and fuck me, it's completely the opposite. So, any rhetoric at all about how people weren't interested in 1975... load of horseshit. Everyone wanted a slice of the EU back in the 70s. They properly wanted it. I mean, we're talking almost 70% of the electorate. You know, over two-thirds. That is a majority. That's a definition of a majority. You don't have half. And I think, whilst we're here, I'm going to go on a tangent. I don't think 50.01 should be classed as majority. I think majority politically needs to have a different definition because of the fucking damage that such a small percentage can make. Because if you've got 48 and 52, it divides. It does. It causes chaos. And I think sometimes you've got to measure the damage to your local communities over a political chess move. And that's a topic for another time, isn't it? Anyway, the Labour Party campaigned in 83 general election on a commitment to withdraw from the EC without a referendum. After the heavy defeat in that election, Labour changed its policy. How very interesting. The Labour Party in the 80s didn't want a piece of the EU. Now, in 85, Margaret Thatcher government ratified the Single European Act, the first major revision of the Treaty of Rome, without a referendum. Ha ha! So, looks like both parties don't give a fuck about referendums. In October 90, under pressure from senior ministers and despite Thatcher's deep reservations, the UK joined the European Exchange Rate Mechanism, with the pound sterling pegged to the Deutschmark, which is what Germany used to trade with, but now it's the euro. Thatcher resigned as Prime Minister the following month, and amid Conservatives' bloody fucking blah, the UK and Italy were forced to withdraw in 1992. And the sterling became under pressure. Now, let's skip to the rising Euroscepticism. You see, Thatcher, who had supported the common market and the Single European Act in the Bruges speech in 1988, did warn against a, quote, a European superstate exercising a new dominance from Brussels, end quote. She influenced Daniel Hannan, who, in 1990, founded the Oxford Campaign for Independent Britain. With hindsight, some see this as the start of the campaign for Brexit, the Financial Times later wrote. In 1994, a chap called Sir James Goldsmith, whoever the fuck that is, formed the Referendum Party to contest the 97 general election on a platform of providing a referendum on the nature of the UK's relationship with the rest of the EU. The party fielded candidates in 547 constituencies. Fuck. But failed to win Parliament seat due to the vote being spread across the country. The referendum party disbanded after Goldsmith's death in 97. Now here we are. The UK Independence Party, UKIP, a Eurosceptic political party, was formed in 1993. I didn't know that. It achieved third place in the UK during the 2004 Eurosceptic elections, European elections, second place in the 2009 European elections, and first place in 2014, with 27.5% of the total vote. This was the first time since the 1910 general election that any party other than the Labour or the Conservatives had taken the largest share of the vote in a nationwide election. UKIP's, well, let's just stop there. Regardless of political view, that's an extremely impressive achievement. It's very, very impressive. It's the first time in almost 100 years that another party has won such a large share, which really speaks to kind of viewpoints of people. But then, why was it 52-48? Again, more questions. UKIP won two by-elections triggered by defecting Conservative MPs in 2014, and in the 2015 general election, the party took 12.6% of the total vote and held one of the two seats won in 2014. So, here we go. Let's move on to the referendum results. Let's get down to the figures, shall we? Now, the result was announced on the morning of the 24th of June, and I fucking remember it as well, because I remember waking up, glancing at my phone, and thinking, come on, come on, come on. Opening up the Guardian app, and there we are. 51.89% voted in favour of leaving the EU, and 48.11% voted in favour of remaining a member of the EU. See how close that is? After the result was declared, Cameron announced that he would resign by October. He stood down on the 13th of July, couldn't wait obviously, with Theresa May becoming Prime Minister after a leadership contest. A petition calling for a second referendum attracted more than 4 million signatures, but was rejected by the government on the 9th of July. So, that's actually really depressing, because over 17 million people voted in favour of leave, and yet only 4 million could be put together for signatures and contest. It's a shame. But also, it's very apparent that Parliament doesn't give a fuck about these petitions, so if you're ever thinking of petitioning for anything, power to you. But they clearly don't give a fuck. Now, the Leave European Union votes counted up were 17,410,742. The Remain number were 16,141,241. There were, get this, 25,359 invalid or blank votes. That's not even 1%. It's not even 0.1%. So the total votes were 33,577,342. And the registered voters turnout was 72.21%. So let's just make a note of that. So 27.79% of people didn't vote. They just didn't. 27 people. Let's put that into another perspective. Almost a fucking third of the population didn't vote. It's interesting, isn't it? It makes you think, was that apathy? Was that confusion? Not wanting to vote? It's a huge portion of people. It makes you wonder, like, of all these reasons, does that really accumulate to 27%? It's a huge number. So we go on, and there's a nice little graph showing the areas that voted leave and the areas that voted remain. Now, if we're looking at general results, Scotland, Northern Ireland and London voted remain, and everywhere else voted leave. The trends were very interesting. So a 2017 study published in Economic Policy showed that the Leave vote tended to be greater in areas which had lower incomes and high unemployment, a strong tradition of manufacturing employment in which the population had fewer qualifications. It also tended to be greater where there was a large flow of Eastern European migrants, mainly low-skilled workers, into areas with a large share of native low-skilled workers. Those in lower social grades, especially the working class, were more likely to vote Labour, while those in higher social grades, especially the upper middle class, were more likely to vote Remain. Studies found that the Leave vote tended to be higher in areas affected by economic decline, high rates of suicides and drug-related deaths, and austerity reforms introduced in 2010. So, just jumping in there. So, it's, what it was is that people weren't necessarily voting to hate or spite the EU. They wanted a radical change. They wanted big difference. They wanted to kind of stir things up. The big problem with that is that that's as far as some voters saw. They saw it as a big change. That's it. They didn't think potentially of the repercussions, but many people who vote don't. Simple as that. Not everyone does. If everyone did, things would be different. But so would every other vote preceding this anyway, so pointless discussion. Now, studies suggested that older people were more likely to vote Leave, and younger people more likely to vote Remain. According to Thomas Sampson, an economist at the London School of Economics, older and less educated voters were more likely to vote Leave. A majority of white voters wanted to leave, but only 33% of Asian voters and 27% of black voters chose Leave. There was no gender split in the vote. Interesting. So, it seems to be that the trend and the demographics of the vote were, if you're older and you're white and you're poor, you're going to vote Leave. And if you're from a more culturally diverse place, you're more highly educated, and you're younger, you're going to vote Remain. Now that's interesting, because people from an older generation, as we've read, have come from a time when people were largely voting in favour of the EU. And so something's happened to jade their views, because they've lived through many more decades than others. So that's another interesting point. So here we go. We're looking at the withdrawal process, the invocation of Article 50, and we've got here EU-UK negotiations, draft withdrawal agreement, attempted ratification. So that was, you know, Article 50 trying to get that place, and there was many votes and the voting's lost, and that's partly why, you know, we've now got Boris Johnson, because people were not happy with kind of the agreements in place at all. Then there were several extensions, the revised withdrawal agreements, of course, we've mentioned before, again, the October extension, and generally now we've got the political developments within the UK. So this covers a few things here. Then we've got the exit day, 31st of January 2020, yep, additional government bills, Brexit fisheries, Brexit UK-Irish relationships. So we've got all the repercussions of coming out. How are, you know, how's the environment going to be impacted? How is our trade? How is our relationships with Ireland? You know, justice and law, that sort of thing. We've got the Nuclear Safeguards Act here of 2018 relating to withdrawal from Euratom that was presented in Parliament in October 2017. And this act makes provision about nuclear safeguards and for connected purposes. The Secretary of State may by relegations make provision for the purpose of ensuring that qualifying nuclear material, facilities or equipment are available only for the use of civil activities, or giving effect to provisions of relevant international agreement. So, there's a lot of detail in this article, a lot, and a bit too much for a drunk wiki. We're already at 40 minutes. So, here we've got the 2017 British general election. So, a general election was held on the 8th of June 2017. And already, just a year in, everyone's fatigued by the politics. Fatigued. And at that time, they announced at short notice by the new Prime Minister, Theresa May. The Conservative Party, Labour and UKIP made manifesto pledges to implement the referendum. The Labour manifesto, differing in its approach to the Brexit negotiations, such as unilaterally offering permanent residence to EU migrants. Now, you had the Liberal Democratic Party and the Green Party manifestos proposed a policy of remaining in the EU. See, right, fuck that, fuck these paragraphs, let's just jump into it, right? So, you've got two right-wings and a left-wing party voting to leave, and you've got two left-wing parties, well, you've got a left-wing and a central left-wing party voting to remain. Very confusing for politics in the UK. People didn't know where they're coming or going, who to vote for. A lot of people were defecting away from Labour, voting for Green Party and Lib Dems, which many people saw as wasted votes because they never gained a majority. Like, they literally almost never gained a majority, especially Green Party, who, just have a read up, some fantastic policies, but also Green Party have some horrifically outdated policies when it concerns anything that isn't recycling or the environment. So people don't vote for them. They vote for parties that have a more rounded approach. Unfortunately, those parties are voting for things that most of their voters don't agree with. Complete shit fest. So you've got people going all over the place. Protest voting, some people scrapping their votes. It's all tits up. Anyway, that was perfect. It was the perfect atmosphere. It was the perfect environment, and that's how the Tories won. And they had the DUP coming in as well. Now, we've got Scotland. Now, that's a big situation in itself. You see, after the Brexit referendum, the Scottish government, led by the Scottish National Party, SNP, announced that officials were planning another independence referendum because Scotland voted to remain in the EU, while England and Wales voted to leave. It had suggested this before Brexit referendum. Now, the first Prime Minister of Scotland, Nicola Sturgeon, requested the referendum be held before the UK's withdrawal, but the UK Prime Minister rejected this timing. The Scottish Parliament voted in favour of holding another independence referendum, with Sturgeon planning it for 2021. At the last referendum in 2014, 55% of voters had decided to remain in the UK, but the referendum about Britain's withdrawal from the EU was held in 2016, with 62% of Scottish voters voting against it. So, Scotland want to be part of the UK, but they also want to be part of the EU. But I think when it comes to it, I think it'd be very interesting to see whether the Scottish people would want independence now, knowing that if they're attached to the UK, they wouldn't be part of the EU. But I'd love to see how that would look. If the UK leaves the EU, would Scotland, breaking away from the UK, be able to jump back into the EU, or would they have to start a laborious process of establishing their own rules or anything? So, it's an interesting one. Anyway, we've got the no deal planning, and we've got the litigation. We've got the impact on Brexit. We've got the cultural references as well. And it goes on. So, here we are. We have the 19th of December 2018. The EU Commission announced its No Deal Contingency Action Plan in specific sectors. In respect to the UK leaving the EU in 100 days' time. See, that was the big risk. A no deal situation. So, that would mean nothing in place. No deal, no trade negotiation deals, no relationship, nothing. Nothing in place. Day one, nothing. The chaos would be catastrophic. But yet there was a great deal of people who were willing to make that sacrifice. But in general, and to conclude from this article, referendum kicked off in 2016. started a process which created a lot of political turmoil within Conservative Party, within voters who believed they knew what they wanted from their parties. So people were switching parties. There was a lot of lack of confidence in people's prime ministers, and it kind of all stemmed through the uncertainty of the situation. What did that situation look like? What did leaving the EU look like? But also, only 52% of people voting. You know, it's not the biggest margin. So, there we go. That is Brexit. There's so much more to cover. There's so much more detail. But we're only looking at a short podcast here. And, you know, I wanted to keep on theme with today. You know, we're leaving the EU in, what, just over an hour? An hour and 20 minutes. And there's no coming back. Or is there? We don't know. Again, there's more uncertainty. So, I'm going to leave it there. If you want to look up anything I've missed, there's literally a gargantuan amount of information I've missed out. I don't want to make the podcast like 10 hours long. So, check it out online. You know, however, if you're far more versed on this than I am, you know, comment on it, talk to me, put some comments on it, interact with the podcast, be great. And, you know, I can come back potentially sober, you know, coherent thoughts and all that. But that's it for this podcast. We're clocking in over 46 minutes now, so hope you've all enjoyed listening. I've definitely rambled on quite a bit. But yeah, I think one of the most interesting things is how back in the early days of the 70s, you know, two-thirds of this country really fucking loved the idea. And Labour initially didn't. And now it's flipped. Labour loves the idea. Now the Tories don't. The very people who fucking signed up in the first place. And now 50% of the people don't want the EU. But we don't know what that looks like now. That vote was 4 years ago, so very interesting. So, that was the end of episode 5, I believe. Yep, we're at episode 5 already. So, again, thanks for sweeping in and listening to a very unorthodox podcast, which I ramble on very incoherently, very drunk, and with no general format in place at all. If you want to kind of, you know, listen to a more generic podcast with a very nice clean format, you know, good nice piece of script together, nice and sober, nice kind of setup. There's some great podcasts out there. One of my favourites that got me into podcasting was a podcast called Sword and Scale. I love crime fiction. I love mysteries. I love that kind of stuff. And Sword and Scale are a personal recommendation from me. But I wanted to try something new. I wanted a different format. I wanted it to be a bit more off script. Try something a bit random, dive in on the deep end, not know the topics that I'm talking about, apart from today, of course, and put a bit of a spin on it, you know. And, you know, I really enjoy these. If this doesn't take off and I only get a few viewers, that's fine. I love these podcasts. And so, I'm going to be making some more. So, if you've been listening, thank you, and have a good evening.